Catherine Blackstone sat in the chair by the bed and looked listlessly around the spare room that Gaunt had opened up for her. The air was close and dusty, and the bed hadn't been aired, but she didn't care. At least it was a fair distance away from the room where her husband died, the room where the body still lay. The body. Not her husband, or her late husband, just the body. William was gone, and what was left behind didn't even have to be addressed by name. Catherine looked at the bed beside her and looked away. Sleep might help, but she couldn't seem to summon the energy to get up, get undressed, and go to bed. And anyway, if she waited long enough, she was sure Edward would come to her. She thought he'd be here by now, but he was probably just being sensible. It wouldn't do for them to be caught together tonight, of all nights. He'd be here soon. Maybe then she'd know what to do, what to say for the best. For the moment, all she wanted to do was sit where she was and do nothing. She'd been married less than 7 years, and here she was, a widow. Widow. There was a harsh finality to the word. That's all there is. There isn't going to be any more. It's over. Catherine's thoughts drifted back and forth, moving around the subject of her husband's death, but unable to settle on it. It was impossible to think of the great William Blackstone dead. He'd been such an important man, meant so much to so many people. Catherine wanted to cry. She might feel better if she could only cry. But all she had inside her was tiredness. How could he have done it? How could he have left her in this mess? How could William have killed himself? The guards thought it was murder, so did everyone else. Only she knew it was really suicide. The guards were already looking for signs of guilt, for something they could use as a motive. She knew they would bring up Edward Bowman, so she met that attack as she met every other attack, by throwing it back in their faces as a lie and defying them to prove otherwise. It has been suggested to us. Oh, yes. She just bet it had.
That little bitch visage wouldn't have waited long to start spreading the poison.
She and Edward would have to be very careful in the future. For a while, at least. Hawk and Fisher sat stretched out in their comfortable chairs, facing the wall. They put out all the lamps, save two, and the parlor was gloomy enough to be restful on the eyes, while still leaving enough light to see by. The house was quiet, the air hot and stuffy.
Don't.
Sorry, I can't sleep. Too much on my mind.
All right, then. You stand watch and I'll get some sleep.
Suits me. I shouldn't think we'll have any more trouble tonight.
Oh, you could be right.
Fisher settled herself comfortably in her chair and wished vaguely she had a pillow.
Whoever killed Blackstone, it didn't have the look of a spur-of-the-moment decision. A lot of careful planning had to have gone into it. What we have to worry about now is whether the killer had a specific grudge against Blackstone, or if he's just the first in a series of victims.
You know, we can't even be sure that Blackstone was the intended victim. Maybe he just saw someone in the wrong place at the wrong time and had to die because he was a witness. The killer might still be waiting for his chance for the real victim.
Don't. Isn't the case complicated enough as it is?
Sorry, just thinking.
Have you had any more ideas on who the killer might be?
Nothing new. Bowman and Catherine Blackstone have to be the most obvious choices. They had the most to gain. But I keep coming back to how the murder was committed. There's something about that locked room that worries me. I can't quite figure out what it is, but something keeps nagging at me. Ah, well, no doubt it'll come to me eventually.
Oh, my head's starting to ache again. I'm no good at problems. Never have been. You know, Hawk, what gets me is the casual way it was done. I mean, one minute we're all standing around in here, knocking back the fruit cordial and chatting away 19 to the dozen. And the next minute, everyone goes off to change and Blackstone is killed. If the killer was one of the people in this room, he must have cast iron nerves.
Right.
They sat together a while, listening to the quiet. The house creaked and groaned around them, settling itself, as old houses will. The air was still and hot and heavy. Hawk dropped one hand onto the shaft of his axe, where it stood leaning against the side of his chair. There were too many things about this case he didn't like, too many things that didn't add up. and he had a strong feeling that the night still had a few more surprises waiting in the wings. Time passed, and silence spread through the old house. Everyone was either asleep or sitting quietly in their rooms, waiting for the morning. The hall and the landing were empty, and the shadows lay undisturbed. A door eased silently open, and Edward Bowman looked out onto the landing. A single oil lamp glowed dully halfway down the right-hand wall, shedding a soft orange light over the landing. He saw no one else about, and relaxed a little. Not that it mattered if anyone did see him. He could always claim he was going to the bathroom, but why complicate matters? Besides, he didn't want to do anything that might draw the attention of the guards. He stepped gingerly out onto the landing and closed his bedroom door quietly behind him. He waited a moment, listening, and then padded down the landing to Catherine's room. He tried the door handle, but the door was locked. He looked quickly up and down the landing and tapped quietly on the door. The sound seemed very loud in the silence. The door eased open, and Bowman darted into the room. The door shut quietly behind him. Catherine rushed to Bowman and clung desperately to him, holding him so tightly he could hardly breathe. She burrowed her face into his neck, as though trying to hide from the events of the day.
"There's my Cath, my strong Cath. I'm here for you now."
After a while, she calmed and relaxed her grip a little. He smiled slightly.
"Glad to see me, Cath."
She lifted her face to his and kissed him hungrily.
"Oh, I was so afraid you wouldn't come to me tonight. I need you, Edward. I need you now more than ever."
"It's all right, Cath. I'm here now."
"But if we're caught together..."
"We won't be. Not as long as we're careful."
Catherine finally let go of him and sat down on the edge of the bed.
"Careful. I hate that word. We're always having to be careful, having to think twice about everything we do, everything we say. How much longer, Edward? How much longer before we can be together openly? I want you, my love. I want you to be with me always, in my arms, in my bed."
"We won't have to keep up the pretense much longer. Just for a while, till things have quieted down. All we have to do is be patient for a little while."
"I'm sick of being patient."
Edward gestured sharply at the wall. Catherine stood reluctantly and lowered her voice before speaking again. It wouldn't do to be overheard, and there was no telling how thin the walls were.
"Edward, do the guards say anything to you about who they think killed William?"
"Not really, but they'd be fools if they didn't see us as the main suspects. There's always been some gossip about us, and we both stood to gain by his death. We could have killed him."
"In a way, perhaps we did."
"What?"
Edward looked at her sharply.
"Catherine, you didn't."
I told him about us."
"You did what?"
"I had to. I couldn't go on living like this, living a lie. I told him I was still fond of him, and always would be, but that I loved you and wanted to marry you. I said I'd do it any way he wanted, any way that would protect his political career, but that whatever happened, I was determined on a divorce. To begin with, he refused to listen. Then he told me he loved me, and he would never give me up. I said I'd walk out on him if I had to, and he said that if I did, he would kill himself."
"Dear God. And you think William..."
"Yes, I think he died because of us."
"Have you told anyone else about this?"
"Of course not. But that's not all, Edward. I..."
She looked at the door. Out on the landing, someone walked past. Catherine rose quickly to her feet and held Edward's arm. They both stood very still, listening. Bowman frowned. There was something strange about the footsteps. Catherine started to say something, and Bowman hushed her with a finger to his lips. They listened carefully for a while, but the footsteps seemed to be gone.
"Did anyone see you come in here?"
"I don't think so. I was very careful. It could have been one of the guards, just doing the rounds to make sure everything's secure. It could have been someone going to the bathroom. Whoever it was, they're gone now. I'd better get back to my room."
"Edward!"
"I can't stay, Cath. Not tonight. Not here. It's too much of a risk. I'll see you again in the morning."
"Yes, in the morning.
Catherine moved away to ease the door open a crack. The landing lay completely deserted. She opened the door wide, and Bowman slipped silently out onto the landing. Bowman waited a moment while his eyes adjusted to the dimmer light. He started along the landing toward his own room, and then stopped as he heard a faint scuffing sound behind him. He spun around, but there was no one there. The landing stretched away before him, open and empty, until it disappeared in the shadows at the top of the stairs. And then the smell came to him, a sharp, musky smell that raised the hackles on the back of his neck. Bowman reached into the top of his boot and drew out a long, slender dagger. The cool metal hilt felt good in his hand. He was in danger. He could feel it. Bowman smiled grimly. If all this was supposed to frighten him, his enemy was in for an unpleasant surprise. He'd never backed away from a duel in his life, and he'd never lost one.
I hope this is William's killer. I'll enjoy avenging his death. Perhaps I didn't always like William, but I truly admired him.
Bowman stepped forward, dagger in hand. Hawk and Fisher reclined in chairs in the parlor.
What the?
Hawk sat bolt upright in his chair. He jumped to his feet, grabbed his axe, and ran out of the parlor, followed closely by Fisher with her sword in her hand. They ran down the hall and pounded up the stairs together. Hawk drove himself harder, taking the stairs two at a time. He burst out onto the landing and skidded to a halt as he looked around him for a target. Edward Bowman lay twisted on the floor, his eyes wide and staring, his clothes splashed with blood, and more spread on the floor around him. His throat had been torn out. Catherine Blackstone stood over the body, her hands pressed to her face in horror. Fisher took her by the shoulders and turned her gently away from the body. Catherine resisted at first, and then all the strength went out of her. She stood in silence, her hands at her sides, staring blindly at the wall as tears ran unheeded down her cheeks. The other guests spilled out of their doors in various stages of undress.
What's the screaming about?
What's going on?
Hawk knelt beside the body. A dagger lay on the floor, not far from Bowman's hand, but there was no blood on the blade. The attack must have happened so quickly that Bowman never had a chance to defend himself. Hawk looked closely at Bowman's body.
Damn!
The killer hadn't been as neat with Bowman as he had with Blackstone. Hawk sat back on his haunches and scowled thoughtfully at the body. Footsteps rose on the stairs behind Hawk. He straightened up quickly and turned, axe in hand, to find Gaunt almost on top of him. He was wearing only a dressing gown and looked flushed and out of breath. Gaunt stared past Hawk.
What is it? What's happened?
Bowman's dead. Murdered.
Hawk looked quickly around to see if anyone was missing, but all the guests were there, kept at a respectable distance from the body by Fisher's leveled sword. Dorimant was the nearest, with the witch visage at his side. Their faces were white with shock. Lord and Lady Hightower stood in the doorway halfway down the landing, both in their nightclothes. Lord Roderick held his wife protectively close to him. Stalker stood in the middle of the landing, his face set and grim, wearing only his trousers and boots, but holding a sword in his hand. Hawk looked carefully at the sword, but there was no blood on the blade. He looked again at Stalker, taking in the dozens of old scars crisscrossing the huge muscular frame, and then looked away, wincing mentally.
All right, everyone downstairs. I can't work with all of you cluttering up the place. Stay in a group and don't go off on your own for any reason. Don't argue, just move. You can wait in the parlor. You'll be all right. There's safety in numbers. Gaunt, you stay behind a minute.
Hawk waited impatiently as the guests filed past him, keeping well clear of the body. Lord and Lady Hightower helped Catherine down the stairs. Her tears had stopped, but her face was blank and empty from shock. Hawk stopped Stalker as he passed.
I'll have to take your sword, Sir Stalker.
Stalker looked at Hawk steadily, and his eyes were very cold. Fisher stepped forward and lifted her blade a fraction. Stalker looked at her and smiled slightly. He turned back to Hawk and handed him his sword, hilt first.
Of course, Captain Hawk. There are tests you'll want to run.
Thank you, Sir Warrior.
Hawk slid the sword through his belt.
The sword will be returned to you as soon as possible.
That's all right. I have others.
Stalker followed the other guests down the stairs and into the parlor. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and relaxed a little.
For a minute there, I wondered.
Yeah, so did I.
Hawk turned to Gaunt, who was kneeling by the body.
Careful, Sir Sorcerer. We don't want to destroy any evidence, do we?
Gaunt nodded and rose to his feet.
His throat's been torn out. There's no telling what the murder weapon was. The wound's a mess.
That can wait for the moment. Is your isolation spell still holding?
Yes. I'd have known immediately if it had been breached. There can't be any more doubt. The killer has to be one of us.
All right. Go on down and wait with the others. And you'd better take a look at Catherine Blackstone. She's in shock. And coming so soon after the last shock to her system.
Of course.
Gaunt nodded quickly to Hawk and Fisher and then made his way back down the stairs. Hawk and Fisher looked thoughtfully at the body.
We can't afford to wait till the experts get here in the morning. We've got to find the killer ourselves.
Right. If we don't, there might not be anybody left in the morning. Well, first things first, let's check the body.
He and Fisher put away their weapons, knelt down beside Bowman, and studied the dead man carefully. Bowman's throat had been torn apart. Hawk frowned grimly as he examined the wounds.
This wasn't done with a sword. The edges of the wounds are ragged and uneven. It could have been a knife with a jagged edge. See how it's ripped through the skin? What a mess. If I didn't know better, I'd swear Bowman had been attacked by some kind of animal.
Right. Take a look at his chest and arms.
There were long, bloody rents in Bowman's shirt front. Similar cuts showed on both his forearms, as though he'd held them up to try to protect his throat.
Strange.
Hawk indicated the torn and bloody arms.
If he had time to raise his arms, he should have had time to use his dagger. But there isn't a drop of blood on the blade.
Maybe he dropped it in the struggle. It must have all happened pretty fast. Bowman never stood a chance. Poor bastard.
She sank back on her haunches and stared unhappily at the body.
You know, Hawk, I wouldn't feel so bad if I hadn't disliked Bowman so much. There were times when I could quite happily have run the arrogant bastard through myself. I was so sure he was the murderer.
I know what you mean. I'd almost convinced myself he was the killer. It all made sense. He had both the motive and the opportunity. And I didn't like him either.
He shook his head tiredly.
Well, we can't apologize to him now, Isabel. But maybe we can bring his killer to justice. So with Bowman gone, who's the main suspect now?
Fisher rubbed her jaw thoughtfully.
Catherine? She was first on the scene at both the murders.
I don't think so. A knife in the chest is one thing, but this? Whatever actually made these wounds, there must have been a hell of a lot of strength behind it to have done so much damage in so short a time. A starving wolf couldn't have done a better job on his throat. And remember, Catherine was standing right over the body when we ran up here, and there wasn't a trace of blood on her clothing.
Very observant. Whoever killed Bowman had to have gotten blood all over him. Did you see blood on anyone?
No. I checked them all carefully as they filed past me, and no one had any blood on their clothes. The killer must have had time to change.
Damn, that would have simplified things.
There's nothing simple about this case. We'd better check all the rooms, just in case there's some blood-stained clothing to be found. But I'm betting we won't find a damn thing. Our killer's too clever for that.
What about Stalker's sword?
All right, what about it?
Fisher gave him a hard look.
Well, you said you wanted to run some tests on it. What did you have in mind?
Nothing, really. I just didn't want him looming over me with a sword in his hand. Remember, at the time, all he had on were his trousers and boots. Where was his shirt? It occurred to me that he might have had to take it off because he'd got blood on it.
I see. I can understand someone wanting Blackstone dead. He had more enemies than most of us make in a lifetime. But why Bowman? And why rip him apart like this? Ugh.
Beats me.
Hawk got to his feet and then bent down again to retrieve Bowman's dagger. He studied it a moment and then tucked it into the top of his boot. Fisher got to her feet and looked down at Bowman's body.
Maybe.
Yeah?
Maybe he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He came out onto the landing, maybe to use the bathroom, and saw something or someone he shouldn't have. So the killer hit him then and there, on the spot. No time to be subtle or clever, just do the job.
Fisher thought about it.
That doesn't explain the savagery of the attack, though, or the nature of the wounds. I don't know about the throat, but those cuts on his chest and arms look a hell of a lot like claw marks to me.
So what does that mean? He was killed by an animal?
Not necessarily. Remember the Valley Killer a couple years back? Everyone thought it was a bear, and it turned out to be a man using a stuffed bear paw strapped to a club.
Yeah, I remember that case. But why should the killer use something weird like that when a knife was good enough for Blackstone? Unless...
Unless what?
Unless this is a different killer. Remember? Visage swore she'd kill Bowman in revenge for his murdering Blackstone.
Two killers under one roof? Oh, come on, Hawk. It's hardly likely, is it? I know what the witch said, but that was just anger and grief talking. I mean, you saw her. Can you honestly see a timid, mousy little thing like her tearing into a man like this?
No, I suppose not. Of course, I have seen something like this before.
Really? Where?
In The Hook.
He looked at the body and shook his head angrily.
This case gets more complicated all the time. Come on, let's check the bedrooms. Maybe we'll get lucky.
That'll be a change.
They started with the first door on the left at the top of the stairs, the spare room that Gaunt opened up for Catherine after her husband's death. The room looked dusty and empty. The single oil lamp still burned, and the bed obviously hadn't been slept in. The sheets hadn't even been turned back.
That's odd. She'd had a terrible shock, and Gaunt had given her a sedative, but she didn't go to bed. She should have been out on her feet, but she hadn't even changed into her nightclothes.
Maybe she was waiting for someone. Bowman, for example?
Yeah. That would explain what he was doing out on the landing. Okay, let's take a look around.
Apart from bloodstained clothing, what are we looking for?
Anything, everything. We'll know it when we see it.
That's a great help, Hawk.
You're welcome.
They searched the room slowly and methodically. It didn't take long. The wardrobe was empty, and so were most of the drawers in the dressing table. There wasn't anywhere else to hide anything. Hawk looked under the bed, just on general principles, but all he found there were a few piles of fluff and an ancient chamber pot with a crack in it. He straightened up and looked vaguely about him, hoping for inspiration. Fisher was leaning over the dressing table.
Found something, Isabel?
I'm not sure. Maybe. Come and take a look.
Hawk moved over to join her. Fisher had found a small wooden box pushed to the back of one of the dressing table's drawers. The wood had been nicely stained and polished, but there was nothing special about it. Hawk looked at Fisher inquiringly. She grinned and flipped open the lid. A tangled mess of rings, earrings, and necklaces glistened brightly in the lamplight. There were gold and silver, emeralds and rubies and diamonds, all mixed carelessly together. Hawk picked out a ring and inspected it closely.
Good quality.
He dropped the ring back into the jewel box and studied the collection thoughtfully.
That little lot is probably worth more than both our annual salaries put together. And she didn't even bother to lock the case.
Which means either she's very careless, or she's got a lot more like that at home.
Wouldn't surprise me. So what's your point?
Oh, think about it, Hawk. Suppose Catherine and Bowman got together and decided to kill Blackstone for the reasons we've already established. Then Catherine decides that while she still wants the prestige and the money, she doesn't need Bowman anymore. He comes to her room, they argue, there's a fight, and she kills him.
With what? Where's the murder weapon? She was standing right over the body when we got there, so she couldn't have had much time to hide anything. And even though she was fully dressed, there wasn't a spot of blood on her. And anyway, we've got the same problem with her as we had with Visage. How could she possibly have caused wounds like those? Even if she had such a weapon, she's not exactly muscular.
You'd be surprised what people can do when they're angry enough.
Yeah, maybe. Let's try the next room.
The next room proved to be the bathroom. Hawk and Fisher stared open-mouthed at the gleaming tilework and the huge porcelain tub. It was at least 6 feet long and almost 3 feet wide. Beyond the tub was a delicate porcelain washstand with its own mirror and a wonderfully crafted wooden commode.
Now that's what I call luxury. Whew!
Fisher bent over the bath and ran her fingers lovingly over the smooth finish.
No more copper tub in front of the fire for me, Hawk. I want one of these.
You have got to be joking. Do you have any idea how much something like that costs? Besides, from what I've heard, those things aren't really healthy.
Not healthy? How could a bath not be healthy?
Well, think of all the steam and water in such an enclosed space. You could end up with rheumatism.
Oh, but think of the luxury. Ooh, feel how smooth this is, Hawk. And imagine being able to stretch out in one of these, up to your chin in hot water, soaking for as long as you wanted. There might even be room for both of us.
I'll order one tomorrow. But you can ask for the raise we'll need in order to pay for it.
They set about searching the bathroom. It didn't take long. There was nowhere to hide anything.
I don't know. Could something have been stuffed down the commode, do you think?
I wouldn't have thought so. If it was blocked, it probably would have flooded over by now. Of course, there's only one way to be sure.
If you think I'm sticking my hand down that thing, you're crazy. It was just an idea, anyway. Come on, let's try the next room.
That's where we left Blackstone.
We'd better take a quick look, just to be sure.
What about Bowman?
What about him?
Well, we can't just leave him lying out there on the landing, can we? I thought maybe we could put him in with Blackstone. At least he'd be out of the way there.
Makes sense. All right, let's move him.
They left the bathroom and went back to where Bowman lay huddled on the landing. He looked smaller somehow now that he was dead. Hawk took his shoulders while Fisher took the legs. Bowman's clothing, soaked in blood, stuck to the floor for a moment, then came free.
He's heavier than he looks.
Fisher backed away toward Blackstone's door.
You've got the lighter end, if anything, and he's staring at me.
Fisher backed into the closed door and kicked it open. She and Hawk then maneuvered Bowman's body through the doorway and dropped him unceremoniously on the floor next to Blackstone. They waited a moment while they got their breath back, then looked about them. Hawk took in the uneven trail of blood Bowman's body left behind on the landing. He winced slightly. Gaunt wasn't going to be pleased.
Doesn't look like anything's been moved.
Yeah, but we better check anyway. It shouldn't take long.
They checked the wardrobe and the dressing table drawers and under the bed, drawing a blank every time. No trace of a murder weapon or any bloodstained clothing.
It was worth a try.
Hawk and Fisher stepped out onto the landing again. Fisher pulled the door too behind her.
Yeah, we're not doing very well, though, are we?
Not very. But then this isn't really our normal line of business. Locked room murder mysteries are usually reserved for the experts. But...
Yeah, but we have to cope because we're all there is. Who does the next room belong to?
Bowman.
The room was clean and tidy, and the bed hadn't been slept in. Bowman's sword was still in its scabbard, hanging from the bedpost. Hawk drew the sword, checked the blade was clean, and then tried the balance. He nodded slowly. It was a good blade, long and thin and light.
Dueling sword. Apparently Bowman had something of a reputation as a duelist.
Didn't help him in the end. In fact, come to think of it, why wasn't he wearing his sword? After all, he was trapped in a strange house with a murderer on the loose.
Yeah, but you don't wear a sword on a lover's tryst now, do you?
If that was where he was going.
Seems likely, though, doesn't it?
I suppose so.
He and Fisher moved quickly around the room, checking in all the usual places, and once again ended up with nothing to show for their pains.
This is a waste of time. We're never going to find anything.
Probably not, but we have to check. How would it seem if we missed some important piece of evidence just because we couldn't be bothered to look for it?
Yeah, I know. Where next?
Across the hall. Stalker's room.
Fisher looked at him uncomfortably.
Are you serious about this, Hawk? I mean, can we really treat Adam Stalker as a suspect? He's a hero. A genuine hero. One of the greatest men this city ever produced. They were making up songs and legends about his exploits when I was still a child.
I don't trust songs or legends. We check his room.
Why? Just because he wasn't wearing a shirt?
Partly. And also because he was one of the last people to arrive on the scene.
Stalker's room looked lived in. His clothes lay scattered across the floor as though he'd just dropped them wherever he happened to have taken them off. A broadsword in a battered leather scabbard lay across the foot of the bed. Hawk picked it up. He drew the sword out with some difficulty and checked the blade. It was clean. Hawk took a firm grip on the hilt and hefted the sword awkwardly.
How he swings this, even with both hands, is beyond me.
Probably helps if you're built like a brick outhouse.
Probably.
Hawk slipped the sword back into its scabbard and dropped it onto the bed. He took a long look at the rumpled bed with its thrown-back sheets and smiled sourly.
At least someone got some sleep tonight.
Oh, the joys of an undisturbed conscience.
Fisher rummaged through the dressing table drawers.
Find anything?
No. You?
No. I'm beginning to think I wouldn't recognize a clue if it walked up to me and pissed up my leg.
They checked all the usual places. No murder weapon, no bloodstained clothes.
Let's try the next room. That's Dorman's, isn't it?
Yeah.
The room was neat and tidy, and the bed hadn't been slept in. They looked everywhere and found nothing.
I could do this in my sleep. And if I was just a little more tired, I would.
Only two more rooms, and we can call it a day.
You mean a night?
Whatever. The next room is the High Towers.
Good. Let's make a mess.
You're getting vindictive.
What do you mean, getting?
The Hightower's room was orderly, and the bed had been slept in. Hawk and Fisher turned the place upside down and didn't find anything. They conscientiously cleared up the mess they'd made and moved on to the last room, feeling pleasantly virtuous. They felt even better when the usual search turned up a small wooden casket tucked under Visage's pillow. Hawk removed the casket carefully and placed it in the middle of the rumpled bed. The box measured about a foot square and 4 inches deep, made from a dark yellow wood neither of them recognized. Carvings of enigmatic runes and glyphs covered the lid, spilled over the edges and down the sides. Hawk reached out to open it, and Fisher grabbed his arm.
I wouldn't. If that is a witch's casket, it could be booby-trapped with all kinds of spells.
Hawk nodded soberly. Fisher drew a dagger from the top of her boot and cautiously slipped the tip of the blade into the narrow crack between the casket and its lid. She flipped the lid open and stepped back quickly. Nothing happened. Hawk and Fisher moved forward to look inside the casket. There were half a dozen bone amulets, 2 locks of dark hair, each tied with a green ribbon, and a few bundles of what appeared to be dried herbs. Fisher picked up one of the bundles.
Smells a little like new mown hay.
She dropped it back into the casket.
You recognize any of this?
Hawk nodded slowly.
Those amulets are similar to the one Blackstone was wearing. I think we could be onto something here, Isabel. What if these are real protective amulets, and the one Blackstone was wearing was a fake? That way, everyone would think Blackstone was protected against magic when actually he wasn't.
If he could be attacked by magic, why bother to stab him? Besides, we know that amulet was magical. Gaunt detected it, remember?
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Hawk closed the casket and put it back under the pillow. He and Fisher took one last look around the room and then went back out onto the landing, shutting the door behind them. They stood together a while, thinking.
Well, you were right. That was pretty much a waste of time.
Thank you.
It just doesn't make sense. How could someone kill 2 men in a matter of hours and then disappear without a trace?
Beats me. Maybe there's an old secret passage or something.
They looked at each other sharply.
Now that is an idea. A secret passage would explain a lot of things. I think we'd better have a word with Gaunt.
Worth a try. But if he knew of any, he'd have told us by now. Unless he's the murderer, in which case he'd only lie anyway.
This is true. Let's check Blackstone's room anyway, just for the hell of it.
Oh.
They moved slowly around the walls, tapping every foot or so and listening for a hollow sound. They didn't find one. They tried the floor in case there was a trapdoor, and even had a good look at the ceiling, but to no avail. They stood together by the door and glared about them. Hawk shook his head irritably.
If there is a secret passage here, it must be very well hidden.
Secret passages usually are. If they weren't, they wouldn't be secret now, would they?
You're so sharp, you'll cut yourself one of these days.
Hawk took one last look around the room and then frowned suddenly.
Wait a minute. Something's wrong.
Fisher looked around but couldn't see anything out of place.
What do you mean, wrong?
I don't know. Something here isn't quite the way I remember it.
He glared about him, trying to work out what had changed. And then he looked down at Blackstone's body, and the answer came to him.
The wine glass! It's gone!
He got down on his knees beside Blackstone's body. The wine stain on the rug was still there, but the glass Blackstone had been drinking from was gone. Hawk peered under the bed in case the glass had rolled away, but there was no sign of it.
Was it there the first time we checked this room?
I don't know. I didn't look. Did you see it?
No, but I didn't look either. I wouldn't have noticed it was gone now if you hadn't spotted it.
Hawk straightened up slowly.
Well, at least that tells us something.
Like what?
It tells us the wine glass was important. If it wasn't, why bother to remove it? In some way, that wine glass must have played an important part in Blackstone's death.
The wine wasn't poisoned. Gaunt told us that.
Yeah, he also said he was going to take a sample of the wine so that he could run some tests on it. We'd better check that he did.
If he didn't, we're in trouble.
Right. Why should the wine be important? I'm missing something, Isabel. I can feel it. It's important, and I'm missing it.
Fisher waited patiently as Hawk concentrated, trying to grasp the elusive thought. But in the end, he just shook his head.
No. Whatever it is, I can't see it. Not yet, anyway. Let's go downstairs. I want to check the lower rooms as well, before I talk to Gaunt about the wine sample.
And if he didn't take one?
Burn that bridge when we come to it.
Hawk looked down at the 2 bodies lying side by side on the floor.
Isabel, I don't think our murderer is finished with us yet.
Hawk thought furiously as he and Fisher made their way down the stairs and into the hall. He'd gone about as far as he could on his own. If he was going to get any further, he had to have more information from Gaunt and his guests, and that meant more cooperation on their part. Some would cooperate, some might, and some wouldn't. In theory, he could order them to do anything, and they were legally obliged to obey him, but in reality, he had to be very careful about what orders he gave. Most of his suspects were important people in Haven. They had a great deal of clout, if they chose to use it. If and when he felt able to accuse someone, he'd better have overwhelming evidence to back him up. Nothing else would do. Unfortunately, evidence was in very short supply at the moment. All he had were endless theories, none of which seemed to lead anywhere. He couldn't be sure of anything anymore. Hawk stopped suddenly at the foot of the stairs and looked down the hall at the closed front door. Fisher stopped beside him and looked at him curiously.
Hawk, what is it?
I just had an intriguing thought. We've been assuming that no one could get in or out of this house because of the isolation spell, right?
Right.
How do we know there is an isolation spell?
Gaunt said so. And besides, we felt the effects when he cast it.
Hawk shook his head.
Gaunt has said a lot of things. We felt a spell being cast, all right, but how do we know it was an isolation spell? Could have been anything. You go into the parlor and talk to Gaunt a minute. Keep him occupied. I'm going to open that front door and see if we really are isolated from the outside world.
Fisher nodded reluctantly.
All right, but you be careful, Hawk.
Hawk grinned and set off down the hall as Fisher went into the parlor. The hall was large and gloomy, and shadows cloaked every recess. Hawk finally came to a halt before the closed front door and looked it over carefully. It looked normal enough. He reached out his left hand and gently pressed his fingers to the wood. It felt strangely cold to the touch and seemed almost to pulse under his fingertips. Hawk snatched his hand away and rubbed his fingers together. They were still cold. Hawk braced himself and took a firm hold of the door handle. It seemed to stir in his hand, and he tightened his grip. He turned the handle all the way around and then eased the door open a crack. The hall was suddenly very cold. Hawk opened the door a little wider and looked out. And outside the door, there was nothing. Nothing at all. Hawk clung desperately to the door. It was like standing on a narrow ledge and looking out over a bottomless drop. No matter where he looked, there was only dark, as though the house were falling on and on through an endless night. A cold wind blew from nowhere, searing his bare face and hands. Hawk, with a great effort, tore his eyes away from the dark. He stepped back and slammed the door. He moved quickly away from it and leaned against the nearest wall. Hawk's hands and face were numb from the cold, but feeling quickly returned as the summer heat inside the house drove the cold out of him. He smiled slightly. If nothing else, he had established that the house was very definitely isolated from the outside world. He wondered how Fisher was getting on. When Fisher entered the parlor, the assembled guests met her with a frosty silence. They sat together in a group, having apparently discovered that there was comfort as well as safety in numbers. They made an ill-assorted group, with some fully dressed and some still in their nightclothes. Catherine Blackstone once again sat by the empty fireplace. She'd regained some of her composure, but her face was still very pale, and her eyes were red and swollen. She held a handkerchief in one hand, as though she'd forgotten it was there. Stalker sat beside her, drinking thirstily from a newly filled glass of wine. Lord and Lady Hightower sat together, staring into the empty fireplace, both lost in their own thoughts. Visage had pulled her chair up next to Doramant's, and she leaned tiredly against him, his arm around her shoulders. The young witch looked frightened and confused, as Doramant looked stubbornly protective. Gaunt sat nearest the door and stood up as Fisher entered.
Well, Captain Fisher, what have you found?
Nothing particularly helpful, Sir Sorcerer. Judging from the extent of his wounds, it seems likely Edward Bowman was attacked by a madman or an animal, or by someone who wanted it to look like an animal attack.
Why should anyone want to do that?
Beats me. Nothing in this case seems to make sense.
Some things never do, girl. You'll learn that as you get older.
Fisher looked at him sharply. There had been something in his voice, something bitter. Stalker finished off the last of the wine and stared moodily into the empty glass. Fisher turned back to Gaunt.
Earlier on this evening, Hawk asked you to run some tests on the wine Blackstone was drinking just before his death. Did you take a sample to test?
I'm afraid not. I was going to do it first thing in the morning.
Damn.
Is there a problem, Captain Fisher?
You could say that. Someone removed the wine glass from Blackstone's room.
You should have put a guard on the door.
We could have, my lord, but we thought it more important to protect all of you against further attacks.
You failed at that, too. I'll have your heads for this incompetence, both of you.
Fisher started to answer him and then stopped as Gaunt's head suddenly snapped around to stare at the hall.
Someone's trying to open the front door!
It's all right, Sir Gaunt. It's only Hawk. He's just checking that the house is properly secure.
Gaunt relaxed a little and stared sardonically at Fisher.
You mean he's checking the isolation spell? What's the matter, Captain? Don't you trust me anymore?
We don't trust anyone. That's our job, Sir Sorcerer.
Of course, Captain. I understand.
Then you'll also understand why we have to search all the rooms on the ground floor.
You've already seen them once.
Not all of them, Sir Sorcerer. We haven't seen the kitchen yet, or your laboratory.
My laboratory is strictly private. No one uses it but me. There's really no need for you to check it. You felt the avoidance spell yourself. It's impossible for anyone to enter the laboratory apart from myself.
We'll still have to check it.
I can't allow that.
I'm afraid I must insist.
No!
Then we'll have to arrest you.
On what charge?
We'll think of something.
Do you really think you have the power to arrest me?
We can give it a damn good try.
Everyone looked around to see Hawk standing in the parlor doorway, axe in hand. Gaunt started to raise his left hand, and then stopped as Fisher drew her sword in a single swift movement and set the tip of her blade against his ribs. Gaunt stood very still. The guests watched in a fascinated silence. Hawk took a firm grip on his axe. The tension in the parlor stretched almost to the breaking point. As Gaunt exhaled, some of the strength seemed to go out of him with it.
I could kill you both, but what would be the point? They'd only send somebody else. And as much as it pains me to admit it, you're the best chance I've got of finding William's killer. I will show you my laboratory, but if either of you ever draw steel on me again, I'll strike you down where you stand. Is that clear?
I hear you. Now let's take a look at this laboratory of yours. Fisher, you come with us. Everyone else stay here. We won't be long.
One moment.
Stalker rose unhurriedly to his feet.
You still have my sword, Captain Hawk. I'm afraid I must ask you to return it. With the murderers still loose in the house, somebody has to be able to protect these people.
Hawk nodded reluctantly, drew Stalker's sword from his belt, and stepped forward to hold it out to Stalker, hilt first. Although it was nowhere near as heavy as Stalker's broadsword, the weight of the sword was still almost too much for Hawk to support one-handed. Stalker took the sword from him as though it were a child's toy. Hawk bowed politely and turned to Gaunt.
Shall we go, Sir Sorcerer?
Gaunt led the way out of the parlor, across the hall, and into the library in tight-lipped silence. Hawk and Fisher followed close behind. Neither of them had put away their weapons. Gaunt opened the door into the kitchen and waved Hawk and Fisher through. They had a quick look around, but it looked like any other well-stocked kitchen, though surprisingly tidy for a man living on his own. They went back into the library and found Gaunt standing before the laboratory door.
Your partner asked me about the wine sample. I'm afraid I didn't take one, but I can assure you the wine was perfectly harmless. My magic would have told me if it were poisonous. I even tasted some myself, remember?
That's not really the point. The wine glass must have been important in some way, or it wouldn't have been taken. Did Fisher ask you about the secret passages?
No. I can see what you're suggesting, Captain, but there are no secret passages or hidden doors in this house. If there were, my magic would have found them.
I see. Well then, I think that's all we have to talk about, Sir Sorcerer. Now why don't you take off the avoidance spell and open that door?
I can't. There is no avoidance spell.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and then at the Sorcerer.
Then what the hell was it we felt?
Gaunt turned around and looked at them. He held his head high, but his eyes were full of a quiet desperation.
She is my lady. No one knows she's here. No one but me. And now you. If either of you ever talk about her to anyone else, I'll kill you. You'll understand why when you see her.
He turned back to the door and took a key from a hidden inner pocket. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and shrugged. Gaunt unlocked the door, pushed it open, and walked forward into his laboratory. Hawk and Fisher followed him, and then stopped just inside the doorway. Hawk clutched at his axe, and Fisher lifted her sword. The succubus smiled at them sweetly. She reclined lazily in the pentacle, her feet just brushing the edge of the blue chalk lines. Hawk had never seen anyone so beautiful. He wanted her. He had to have her. He'd kill anyone who tried to stop him. He stepped forward, and Fisher grabbed his arm. Hawk tried to pull free, and when he couldn't, he spun furiously on Fisher and lifted his axe to split her skull. Their eyes met, and he hesitated.
No!
Reality came flooding back, and he slowly lowered his axe, horrified at what he'd almost done. He looked at the succubus again and felt the same insane desire stir within him.
My God, no.
He fought it down ruthlessly and wouldn't look away until he was sure the beautiful creature no longer held sway over him. He looked at Gaunt, standing beside him with his head bowed.
You fool. You damn fool.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Visitors. It's not often I'm allowed visitors.
Is that what I think it is?
Yes. It's a succubus. A female demon, the embodiment of sexual attraction.
Fisher looked at the creature in the pentacle.
Ugh.
Fisher felt a strange attraction burning deep within her, and her skin crawled. She shook her head sharply, and the feeling slowly died away. Fisher glared coldly at Gaunt.
No wonder you didn't want us in here. Your friends in the parlor would disown you in a moment at the merest hint that you kept a succubus under your roof. When did you summon her out of the dark?
A long time ago. Please, she's no danger to anyone. She can't leave the pentacle except at my bidding, and she can't leave the house at all. My wards see to that.
You let her out once, though. You let her loose in the hook, and she killed at your command.
Yes, but that was the only time. She was under my control.
I was there. I saw what she did to those men. It took weeks to get the stench of the blood off the streets. She's too dangerous, Gaunt. It would only take one slip on your part and she'd be loose. With her power, she could destroy all Haven in a single night. You have to dismiss her, Gaunt. You have to send her back into the darkness.
I can't! Do you think I haven't tried? To begin with, I couldn't because she was the source of my power. Without her, I was just another alchemist, with only a smattering of the high magic. And then I grew to need her. She's like a drug I have to have. Women don't mean anything to me anymore. They can't compare with her. I have to have her. I can't give her up. I won't. If you try to make me, I'll kill you.
Fisher lifted her sword a little.
Don't!
Fisher looked at Hawk, and he smiled grimly.
Unfortunately, if Gaunt dies, his hold over the demon is gone, and she would be free of all restraints. For the time being, at least, we have to keep him alive.
Am I really so terrible? I am love and joy and pleasure.
And you'd kill us all if it weren't for that pentacle. I've met demons before. You kill to live and live to kill. You know nothing but destruction.
He met her gaze unflinchingly with his one remaining eye, and the succubus looked away first.
You're strong. Such a pity. Still, I think I'll enjoy killing you when the time comes. After all, Gaunt can't deny me anything. Can you, darling?
These death threats are starting to get on my nerves. The next person to threaten Hawk or me is going to regret it, because I will personally chop them into small pieces. You remember, demon, a sword blade doesn't care how powerful you are.
The succubus just smiled at her.
Please, there's no need for any of this. As you can see, there's nowhere here an assassin could be hiding. You must leave, now.
Hawk looked around him, refusing to be hurried. The laboratory was jammed with solid wood benches, half buried under various alchemical equipment, and all four walls were lined with simple wooden shelves bearing stoppered glass bottles in various sizes. Fisher moved over to examine some of the bottles. One large specimen contained a severed monkey's head. Fisher leaned forward to get a closer look, and the head opened its eyes and smiled at her. She stepped back, startled. The monkey's head winked at her slyly and then closed its eyes again.
Hawk, let's get the hell out of here.
Hawk nodded. He and Fisher backed slowly out of the laboratory and into the library. Neither of them felt entirely safe in turning their backs on the succubus. Gaunt backed out after them. The succubus blew him a kiss. After locking the door, Gaunt turned round to face Hawk and Fisher, and they saw a sheen of sweat on his face. He squared his shoulders and did his best to meet their accusing eyes.
I know I have to get rid of her. Perhaps when this is over.
Yes, perhaps. We'll talk more about this later. In the meantime, I want you to do something for me.
If I can, what is it?
I want you to set up a truth spell.
Are you sure that's wise, Captain?
You can do it, can't you?
Of course I can do it. It's not exactly a complicated spell. In fact, it's something of an interest of mine. but the spell only lasts for a limited time, and if you're not very careful about the questions you ask, the answers you get will be worthless. There are all kinds of truth, Captain Hawk, and I should point out that some of the people here aren't going to take kindly to the idea of being questioned under a truth spell.
I'll deal with that. All you have to do is set up the spell. I take full responsibility.
Very well. Where do you want the spell cast?
In the parlor.
Why don't you go on in and break the news to them? They might take it better, coming from you. Hawk and I will join you in a minute.
Gaunt bowed politely and left the library. Hawk waited until the door closed and then sank tiredly into the nearest chair. Fisher pulled up another chair and sat down beside him.
A succubus. I'd heard about such things, but I never thought I'd actually meet one.
Right. I feel like I want to take a bath just from being in the same room with her. Ugh. All right, she was beautiful, but she made my skin crawl every time she looked at me.
Yeah.
They sat in silence a while, thinking.
Hawk, do you really think Gaunt let the succubus loose in the hook?
It seems likely.
The bodies you found there, you said they'd been ripped apart. Like Bowman?
Hawk frowned.
Not really. The hook was much worse. But I see your point, Isabel. The succubus has to be a suspect, either as the murderer or the murder weapon. Gaunt can let her out of that pentacle anytime he likes. At the time of the first murder, Gaunt said he was in the kitchen. But he could easily have slipped out long enough to release the succubus. All he had to do was go via the library, and we'd never have seen him. The succubus's powers are probably limited in the house by the sorcerer's wards. But she could still have killed Blackstone and Bowman, while Gaunt remained in plain view, giving him a perfect alibi.
Except he wasn't in plain view during either of the murders. Besides, could something like a succubus prowl around the house without Visage detecting it?
I don't know. She sensed there was something nasty in the library, even though the demon was shielded by the pentacle. But then again, she's not in the same class as Gaunt.
A succubus. Whew. Just what we needed. Another suspect with magical powers.
Well, it's not that bad, Isabel. If the succubus had intended to kill someone, I really can't see her stabbing them neatly through the heart and then scurrying back later to steal their wine glass. It doesn't make sense.
When has this case ever made sense?
You might just have a point there. Come on, let's get back to the parlor. Maybe the truth spell will help to sort things out.
We're going to have some trouble there. They're really not going to be happy about the truth spell.
I don't give a rat's ass. One way or the other, I'm going to get some answers out of them, and to hell with the consequences.
Fisher looked at him fondly.
Oh, what the hell. We're still young. We can get other jobs. Let's do it.
They're failures at their work, so they're invoking the spells.
They stepped into the parlor.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Everyone turned to stare at them. He looked about him, taking in the silent, hostile faces, and knew Gaunt hadn't been able to persuade them. Not that he'd expected it for 1 minute.
Just in case there's any doubt among you, Edward Bowman is dead. From the nature of his wounds, it's clear it was a frenzied and vicious attack. This second murder means that I have no choice but to proceed with the official investigation now, rather than wait for my superiors in the morning. I have therefore instructed the sorcerer Gaunt to set up a truth spell.
Instead of the babble of outrage he'd expected, Gaunt found himself facing a stubborn, unyielding silence. They'd all clearly decided they weren't going to cooperate.
I'm sorry, but I have to insist.
You can insist all you like. I won't answer any of your damned questions.
The law is quite clear, my lord.
To hell with the law, to hell with you.
In that case, my lord, we'll just have to do it the hard way. I will instruct the sorcerer Gaunt to prepare a truth drug. I will then knock you down, and Fisher will kneel on your chest while I feed you the drug.
You wouldn't dare.
Oh, yes, he would.
Fisher moved forward to stand beside Hawk.
And so would I. One way or another, my lord, you will answer our questions, just like everyone else. I'd advise you to settle for the truth spell. It's so much more dignified.
Hightower looked at Hawk and Fisher and saw that they meant it. For a moment, he considered defying them anyway, but the moment passed. He held his wife's hand tightly. There were ways around a truth spell. To start with, it couldn't compel him to talk. Hawk took Hightower's silence for assent and looked around to see if there were any further objections. Lady Hightower was glaring daggers at him, and Stalker was frowning thoughtfully, but nobody had anything to say. Gaunt stepped forward.
Everything is ready, Captain Hawk. We can begin whenever you wish.
Dormant turned to the sorcerer.
I'm not too clear on what a truth spell entails. How does it work?
It's really very simple. Once the spell is cast, no one in this room will be able to tell a lie for a period of about 20 to 25 minutes. The duration of the spell is limited by the number of people involved. You can, of course, refuse to speak or even evade the question, but that in itself tells us something. For as long as the spell lasts, nothing can be said but the absolute truth.
If we're going to do some serious talking, how about a little wine to wet our whistles before we start?
He held up the bottle of white wine he'd been using to fill his own glass.
Hold it. I'm not too keen on wine at the moment. Gaunt, can you check it hasn't been tampered with?
Of course.
Gaunt gestured lightly with his left hand, and the wine seemed to stir briefly in the bottle.
It's perfectly sound, Captain. Not one of my better vintages, but...
With your taste in wine, it's hard to tell. Now, who's for a drink?
Thank you.
Half a glass.
It seemed everybody was. Gaunt passed around the glasses, and Stalker poured the wine. People began to relax a little. Stalker left Hawk until last and gestured with his head that he wanted to speak privately with him. The two men moved away a few feet.
Just a thought about the locked room. You staked a vampire earlier today, right?
Right. What's that got to do with anything?
Think about it. Vampires are shapeshifters, remember? They can turn themselves into bats or even into mist.
Right. A locked door wouldn't stop a vampire, not once it had been invited into the house. It could turn to mist and seep through the cracks around the door. Now, wait a minute, it doesn't work.
Why not?
The undead don't usually need to stab their victims with a knife. And besides, vampires don't eat or drink, they can't. But everyone here was invited to dinner, and I've seen everybody with a glass in their hand at one stage or another. No, it's a nice idea, but there are too many ways a vampire would have given himself away by now. Thanks anyway, Sir Stalker.
You're welcome. It was just a thought.
Stalker moved back to rejoin the others.
If everyone would care to take a seat, we can begin.
Hawk and Fisher and the guests pulled up chairs in a rough semicircle facing the sorcerer. He waited patiently until they were settled. He made a sweeping motion with his left hand. Time seemed to slow and stop.
Antalantra!
The jolt shook the room. There was a vague tension in the air, and then everything snapped back to normal. Hawk frowned. He didn't feel any different.
Who's going to ask the questions?
I will. I suppose we'd better start with a test. My partner is...
He tried to say the word short and found he couldn't. His mouth simply wouldn't form the word.
Tall! Your spell seems to be working quite efficiently, Sir Sorcerer.
Gaunt nodded calmly. Fisher gave Hawk a hard look and he smiled awkwardly. He looked quickly around the assembled guests and braced himself. All right, it was time to leap in at the deep end. As those assembled resigned themselves to the realities of the truth spell that was now cast over the room, Hawk faced the task at hand.
Sir Gaunt, let's start with you.
Very well.
You are a sorcerer.
Yes.
Did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No.
Did you bring about their deaths indirectly by use of your magic?
No.
You have an acquaintance who helped you in the hook. Is that person in any way associated with the murders?
That is highly unlikely.
He didn't say it was impossible. Let's push this a little further. You were once a sorcerer to the king.
Yes.
You quarreled with him?
Yes.
Was it about your acquaintance?
In a way.
What happened? Why did you leave the court and come here, to Haven?
Gaunt hesitated.
The king wanted her for himself, and I wouldn't give her up. I couldn't. So I came here to work things out on my own.
Wait a minute. Who are you two talking about? What's this woman got to do with anything?
Apparently nothing. Please relax, my lord. We'll get to you in good time. That's all for the moment, Sir Sorcerer. Now then, Sir Dormant.
I didn't kill them.
I have to ask the question. Otherwise your answer won't mean anything. Did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No, I didn't.
Hawk looked at him narrowly. Dormant sat awkwardly in his chair. His smile was weak, and his eyes were evasive. Hawk wondered what he was hiding.
You said earlier that Visage was with you at the time of the first murder. Was that true?
Yes.
Dormant didn't look too happy about admitting it.
Why was she with you?
Dormant looked at Visage, who bit her lip and then nodded unhappily. Dormant looked back at Hawk.
She was the first one to find William's body. She'd gone to his room to talk to him and found him lying dead on the floor. She came to me for help.
Everyone sat up straight in their chairs. Hawk felt a sudden rush of excitement as he finally put two and two together. He looked at Visage.
The room wasn't locked when you found him? You just walked right in?
Yes, it wasn't locked.
Of course, that's it. That's what I've been missing all along.
What do you mean, Hawk?
I finally worked out how the murder took place in a room locked from the inside. Simple. The door was never locked to begin with.
Of course the door was locked. You had to break it down with your axe. I was there, remember?
How did you know the door was locked? Did you try to open it?
Well, no.
Exactly. Neither did I. Catherine came down and told us the door was locked. We went back with her, but she was careful to get to the door first. She rattled the door handle convincingly, told us again that it wouldn't open, and ordered me to break the door down. Afterwards, the lock was so twisted that we couldn't tell it wasn't locked. And that's why we found the key on the floor and not in the keyhole.
Everyone looked at Catherine, who stared at the floor with her head bowed.
Is this true?
Yes. I lied about the door being locked, but I didn't kill William.
If you didn't, then who did?
He committed suicide.